all that, and we're talking gadgets with Fevzi, our gadget detective. If you have an issue with something technical, maybe your laptop's playing up, your smartphone keeps switching itself off, whatever the issue, you can get in touch and Fevzi will sort it for you. The number 03459 57 0057. Fevzi, before we get on to that though, tell us about your gadget of the week.
Gadget of the week. Well, I thought we'd take a look at memory cards now, because they're kind of like often overlooked. We go out and we rush out and we buy our gadgets, and either they don't come with a memory card or one that's so paltry as to be useless. So but not all memory cards are the same, and I thought it would just be worth sort of looking at one particular range, but also pointing out what people need to consider. So I'm looking at a range today from a company called SanDisk. They do a range called the Extreme Pro UHS One memory cards, and this is a range that provides good speed, not the very fastest speeds. There's other ranges for that, but this range is for people, for example, who want the highest possible capacity. So the cards, although they're all of the same size, they can store different amounts of information. So in this case, the range goes from 16 gigabytes, which costs about £16, up to 512 gigabytes, which is half a terabyte of data. I mean, that's more than a lot of computers have got in terms of hard disk.
That means nothing to me, though. That's the problem. When people start talking about terabytes, I'm just a little bit, what?
You should be frightened when they talk about terabytes. That's why they call them terabytes. But so to give you an idea, so if you, a typical user of a big capacity disk would be someone who's got a camcorder that can record in 4K. Maybe their smartphone can record in 4K. So 4K is four times the number of dots as an HD television set. Okay, right. So we were all talking about HD, and was it HD, and that's a good image. But imagine you had a picture that was made up of four HD TV sets, 2x2, so it had four times as many dots in it. Now, there are even smartphones now that can shoot in that quality 4K video, four times as many dots on the screen. So it's very, very high quality. But those things, they take up a lot of space when you record it. So if you're just recording to the internal memory on your phone, that's going to, it's going to finish quite quickly. So to give you an idea, the £300 card, the 512 gigabytes, that will store about 50 hours of this 4K video. So that's plenty. And each time you go down 25 hours, 12 or so hours of this video. So it's designed for people to do that. You wouldn't want, for example, a 512 gigabyte card if all you were doing was storing photos,
right? Okay.
Because you'd literally be able to store millions of photos for that. But what you need to look at is what the quality of the card is, what the speed of the card is. So these ones will do enough speed so that it won't stutter when you're trying to record and play back high definition or 4K video. This particular range is shockproof, X-ray proof, and waterproof, and again, that can make a difference if you tend to put things through their paces a little bit.
So it's going to keep your stuff safe.
Yeah.
We always say when you're on, there's no such thing as a stupid question.
Only stupid answers.
Yes. No. We never say that. So am I right in thinking with these memory cards, it is all about storing photos, video, that kind of thing? I mean, I'm still doing it on disk. Am I old school?
Well, it's in terms of when you're trying to capture it, when you're trying to either when you want to take your, let's say, your music collection around with you, and you've got a smartphone or an MP3 player that has a memory card slot in it, which is quite a number of them. Apple stuff doesn't do that. They just say go and buy a new one when you run out of memory. But other manufacturers, they tend to have memory card slots. So let's say you wanted to carry around your music collection. With one of these cards, you could potentially carry around, your whole music collection plus all those of your neighbours as well. I mean, they're huge. So it's for carrying things around with you like that. It's for being able to shoot photos and video on your smartphone, without worrying about running out of space. You can do voice notes on them, you can do all sorts of things, but typically it's the video that takes up most of the space. And increasingly now, with the new ranges of cameras that are coming out, with the twin lens capabilities and ever higher resolutions, we're going to need more capacity. And you want to choose a phone, ideally, all things being equal, you want a phone that has a memory card slot in it, so that when you run out of space, as you will do when you start shooting 4K video, that you can just, you know, upgrade the memory without having to buy a new phone or constantly be having to transfer it away. One other thing I would mention to you is in terms of bang per buck, because I was looking at these, I said to you that this particular range goes from about £16 to £300, and that gives you a different price per gigabyte. And there's a sweet spot. So in the range, there is the one that gives you the cheapest. So the 256 gig card, which is the one down from the top, that allows you to buy most cheaply. That gives you 43 pence per gigabyte of storage, which is huge, because a gigabyte is 1,000 megabytes, and a good photo might be 5 megabytes. So that you can get 200 photos stored for 43 pence. And of course, you can always wipe it or transfer it off and reuse it. But that when you're buying a card, look at what, not just the cost of the card, but how much am I paying per gigabyte of storage, and try and pick the sweet spot.
Okay, and 256 gigabytes for most people,
it's ample.
It's going to be more than enough.
I would have said even there's an argument for going for you know, a smaller card, even 64 or 128 gigabytes. Although the cost per gigabyte is a bit higher, it might be more than you need. Plus, there is a danger of getting very big cards, is that you might get an extremely capacious card, but then it means you never change the card, you never transfer it off because you don't need to, you don't make your backup copies, and when you lose that card, or if that card fails, then you could have lost a year's worth. One thing worth noting about this, the SanDisk cards, which is nice, is when you buy a SanDisk card, you get a free download of a program called Rescue Pro Deluxe, which enables you to recover files and data that might have become corrupted or inadvertently deleted from your card. And that's nice to have. I mean, I deal with a lot of people who not only lose data on their computers, but lose it on their devices, on the memory cards, because memory cards can become corrupted or can be inadvertently erased. You know, pretty much everyone has accidentally erased a card at some point. It does happen. And
they're quite little, aren't they? I'd be worried I'd lose it.
And these are the SD cards. So these are the ones that are about the size of bit bigger than a thumbnail,
see what I mean?
A postage stamp. But then you've got the micro SD cards, which are about the size of the nail on your little finger.
Digi-diny. What hope have I got for remembering where I've put it, and then being able to find it again?
Yeah, I mean, you can leave them in the device and transfer the data by connecting the device either wirelessly or through a cable to your computer, but always back these things up. But it is amazing how far these things have come. I'll share with you in the future some of the fastest cards, but this struck me because it had a 512 gigabyte capacity, which is huge. I mean, you know, that's, as I say, that's more than most desktop computers and laptops would have in terms of their own internal hard drive space.
We have our first question in from Funky J. If you have a question for our gadget detective, you can call 03459 570057, or you can text 81333, start your message with the word radio. So Jay says, any idea how I can get all my old WhatsApp history from my old Windows mobile onto my new WhatsApp account on my new Samsung mobile?
That's really tricky, because that's a third-party app, and it's very hard to do that. There is I'm sorry, what was the phone? Just remind me again.
It just says his old Windows mobile onto his new Samsung.
Yeah, you see, that's going to be really tricky, because that's across two different operating systems as well. So the Windows mobile will have been running some version of Windows Phone, and the Samsung will be running a version of Android, which are chalk and cheese. I think you will really struggle. I think the only thing you can do is look on the WhatsApp support site and see if they provide a tool for that purpose. But I I think it's unlikely, because particularly because it's across platforms, unless they have a sort of backup tool that they provide. I mean, Windows Phone, for example, provides a backup tool, but that's when you're migrating from one Windows Phone to another.
Mm. I'm more interested in finding out what Funky Jay has on his WhatsApp history that he's so desperate to keep.
Well, you know, the other thing that you can do, and it's a bit of a low-tech solution, but you can do screen grabs. You can just copy this.
Turn
it into JPEGs and then back those up. And it's not, it's
that's
a bit
cumbersome.
That's
why you're the gadget detective. Now, though, we're talking to our gadget detective. If you have a question for Fevzy, anything technology related, you can call 03 459 57 0057, or you can text 81333. Start your message with the word radio. What's this I've been reading, Fevzy, about quite serious security flaws that could give hackers complete access to a phone's data? This affecting Android devices, I understand.
Yeah, this is a series of flaws that they've found in Android-based smartphones and other devices, tablets as well, potentially at risk as well. And it's not all devices, because it's the ones that use a particular brand of processor in it. So Android devices can have different brands of processor in it. But still, it's thought that about 900 million Android phones worldwide are affected or potentially affected by this problem. So there is a problem in the software that runs on the chips inside 900 million Android devices. Some of the affected devices have been listed, and you can go to the BBC Tech News website and you can find a list there, but it's not an exhaustive list. So why is this a problem? It's a problem because these are vulnerabilities that then apps running on your system designed to take advantage of these weaknesses could be used to take control of your device, to allow them to do on your device anything that you could do, which includes copying off the data and then deleting it, corrupting it, scrambling it and ransoming it back to you. There's any number of things they could do. They could get hold of your credit card information, your shopping information, anything like that, your email account. What we have to realize with phones now is that they are mobile computers that just happen to make phone calls as well. And for that reason, we need to think about securing them in the way that most of us have learned to do with our PCs and laptops. So, you know, we run security software on there. So what is the advice? What can you do? Well, the general advice is this. Try to make sure that you're always, if you're an Android user or any other form of smartphone user, try and make sure you're running the most recent version of the operating system, that be that Android or iOS on AppleKit, or indeed Windows Phone. Try to keep up to date. If your phone is of an age where it will no longer support the latest versions of, say, Android, then you should consider changing your phone to a more modern one, because when these problems are found, manufacturers don't always go back and correct all the old versions of the software. They may just do it on the most recent version or version. So if you've got a phone that's, you know, 3, 4, 5 years old and it can no longer run the latest version, you could be insecure, you could be vulnerable, and there might be nothing you can do about it with that device, which is a shame, because otherwise you may be happy with the phone. So that's number one, make sure the operating system is up to date. Number two is, when you're downloading apps from an app store, make sure that it is the official app store. Okay, so in the case of Android, the Google Play Store. And don't download an app which is brand new and has no reviews on it, because there are many fake apps that go onto the official app stores.
Ah, okay.
And you have to just wait. So if something is, you know, a few days or a few weeks old, don't download it. Wait until there is a range of reviews on there, a whole bunch of reviews saying this is great, or this is fake, or this is a scam, and look at it and avoid downloading it in the first place.
You don't want to be the guinea pig.
No, you don't. And it's tempting, because actually the advice that they're giving at the moment, which is not advice that I share without warning, is that there's a free app that you can download to check to see if you're vulnerable. Now, the problem with a brand new free app to check to see if you're vulnerable to this problem is that invariably there will be fake versions of that up in app stores as well. So even if you are vulnerable, you can only still do what I've advised you to do in any event. So do that.
Can you get like an antivirus thing for your phone, like you would for your laptop?
Absolutely, yeah. And funnily enough, I was actually evaluating one today from Symantec. They do Norton range. There are others that do this as well, but I was looking at this today. You buy a single license for a year or 2 years, and it will cover up to 5 devices, you know. And this, at the moment, I think they're selling it for about £10 if you look at the offers, but usually it's about 20 or 30. But those 5 devices aren't just, oh, your Windows desktop and your Windows laptop. They're also Android devices and other mobile devices as well. So with a single purchase, you can now start to protect your mobile devices at the same time as your more sort of conventional laptops and desktops. And you really should do that. But also, the same rules apply. You know, you need to be careful. Just don't provide information about yourself or your bank account to people who purport to be your bank. Yeah, certainly don't reply to text messages or emails that request this information. If you think it might be genuine, contact your bank on a number that you can independently verify and ask them about this, because in most cases these are scams. So people are tricking you into revealing information such as your email account. And if people get into your email account, effectively that's the keys to the kingdom, because you know, when you forget your password on a website, you can actually usually you click on a button on the screen saying, I've forgotten my password, email me a reset code. Okay, but if they've got access to your email, so that means they can go to your bank, reset your password, lock you out of your own account, and steal all your money.
Nightmare. I've got one for you. So I got an email the other day from a friend, a weird-looking email, so I didn't click on the link.
Yes.
But then I contacted her to say, look, I think you might have been hacked.
Yes.
But she knew nothing about it. And when I looked at the email address, it was her name, but it was different, if you see what I mean. So it was her name, but then with a different, like, at wherever, blah, blah, blah. Now, has she been hacked and she doesn't know? What's going on there?
It's possible. So there's a number of possibilities. One possibility, as you say, she's been hacked and something is sending out spam email from her account to all the email addresses in her email address book. So that's very possible. And what she should do is do a full system scan and try and determine whether her machine's infected. She should look to see if it shows any telltale signs, like running very slowly, for example. The other possibility is that the email hasn't come from your friend and has been what's called spoofed. So that's where you receive an email and it appears to come from one person because the from line has your friend's email address, but actually it may not have done. So in fact, what may have happened is that another list of email accounts has been hacked somewhere on a server, on a website server, somewhere else, and it's just appearing to come from your friend, because by doing that, they're trying to engender trust.
I think that's what it is. Because as I say, the from bit looked like it was from her, but when I looked at the rest of the email, it was something different.
Your friend should also do those scans.
Scan, just
sure.
be on the safe side. Yeah. Graham's got in touch to say, I have a Humax HD 1000 FreeSat HD recorder hooked up to a modem for the iPlayer, only thing we use other than recording TV. Losing the iPlayer in September. What is the best thing to buy to get back the iPlayer? TV is 7 years old. Sony, not smart TV.
Okay, so you can buy little Android boxes. So we said Android is for smartphones and tablets, but actually you can buy little boxes that are Android that just plug into your TV and they will run iPlayer, and you just plug them into your TV and get a remote control and away you go. They've effectively got the gubbins of most of a smartphone within them. Failing that, you may already have devices that can attach to your TV that will give you that. So your tablet or your smartphone may be able to, through a wire or wirelessly, connect to your TV set and you can use your device that you may already own as a platform on which to run iPlayer.
Ah, okay. Just in case Graham didn't hear that, because he's also put at the end of this text, I'm a taxi driver, so it's not always possible to hear the answer. You see, he could be sat there now, bless him. He's trying to listen to you. He's got someone, chatterbox in the back of his cab, won't shut up, and he's trying to hear the answer. If people do want to contact you directly and get free technical advice, they can do that, can't they?
They can, and bless you for that. So you can follow me on Twitter, @GadgetDetective. Come and say hello, or if you've got a question, you know, I'll try and help you there. If it's something a bit more in depth and doesn't fit into 140 characters, you can go to www.gadgetdetective.com, and there's a free tech advice forum there where trusted contributors will help.
Yeah, you can also listen to the BBC's Let's Talk About Tech podcast as well.
I know. I've
You're everywhere. Very quickly before you go, I see Apple back in the news. This time they've been urged to rethink their plan to convert one of their emoji symbols.
Yeah.
So did they really think it was a good idea to have a handgun emoji symbol?
Well, it wasn't their idea. So the emojis are the emoji set of characters is set by an independent body, and every manufacturer then does their version. So they will have their version of a handgun, and it will look different on a Windows phone or an Apple or an Android phone.
So we should probably just say emojis are those like little faces, like a smiley face or
also
face smiling.
Sometimes known as emoticons.
And...
yeah, they're the little, as you say, smileys and so forth. But there's a whole bunch of stuff. You know, including guns, unfortunately. And Apple's thoughts, you know what, we're going to turn the handgun symbol into a water pistol because we don't like what's happening with, you know, gun control and all these incidents and so forth. Pretty much shortly after that, Microsoft went from turning their toy gun into a real gun. The problem here is this. You can send an emoji from your phone and not know what it'll look like on the device that it's received on, because it's different. And what you need, it's a bit like, if you imagine if you were sending someone an email but you wouldn't know what the letters would look like at the other end. I mean, it's a bit daft.
Ideal.
What you need to have is some sort of centralization, because at the moment you could be thinking you're sending a picture of a water pistol for a laugh
and it's a handgun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or vice versa. I'm going to come round and sort you out, says the message, and actually it's a water pistol. They don't take it seriously. And then someone turns up with a real gun. I know that's an extreme example.
It is slightly,
but
I get your point.
You can see what I'm
getting
at. There's also emojis are meant to make things less complicated, not more complicated.
On that note, thank you so much to Fevzi, our gadget detective. He'll be back with us in a couple of weeks.